Welcome to the Jet Life Aero podcast. My name is Tom Lelio. I'm your ultimate jet guide. And today we're joined by Richard Whittles of Farnborough Airport. Thanks so much for being here.
Thank you very much. Nice to see you guys.
Thank you.
Cheers. Thank you.
I'm a new broker. I just started in June. New to the aviation industry in that sense. But I've always been passionate about aviation my entire life and always wanted to combine both business and aviation. And that's how I found myself in the career I'm in right now. I've always kind of tried to think of like a five-year plan and how I can expand it past just being a broker. So looking at FBOs and that kind of thing. So I'm just curious to learn, you know, if you have any suggestions for, you know, a young person in the aviation industry, how they can get into the FBO business, maybe as an expansion onto what they're currently doing. That's really what my question would be.
Should I start on that side? Should I start with that?
Yeah, we can.
Yeah, is that you happy to? Sure. So the main thing from you, I mean, I from my experience, I've been in AV. I've worked on the airport site now since 2006. Fell into aviation, wasn't from an aviation background, but my background's customer service. So it's end-to-end from a customer point of view. I'm a little bit geeky. I quite like data, quite like stats. So coming to this world, there's a fascinating world where you can learn a lot about different stuff. You can, you know, just learning your aircraft recognition is a basic first step, which you've probably already got down. Just getting into the experience of these things and learn from people that have been in the environment, listening is fantastic because you can absorb as much data. You want to be a sponge, absorb as much as you can. From my point of view, having worked both in an aircraft management side of things, that's where I kind of cut my teeth on aircraft management, and moving into an FBO side. It's all about trying to ensure that from a customer perspective, you're trying to enhance the customer's experience. You know, being open and honest about what you can and can't do is really, really key in this market. It's such a small world, especially in Europe. I think you guys are a little bit broader because of how big your market is. But, you know, just gaining that experience from other people that have kind of been there and done it, and also listening to your customer. What I find is that everybody's different. Whilst our set of services are pretty much the same, we'll always handle an airplane. The way a customer wants things are can be quite unique and different. So we have to listen to our customers and try and mold our model around them rather than the other way. You have to be the one that's flexible, but because ultimately our customers generally come to you because they want your services. So that's really, really fascinating. But listening, just absorbing as much as possible. Such a fascinating industry. And it's constantly changing now. Now we're on the sustainability, sort of a huge sustainability kind of journey. And from an airport point of view, we're really trying to push that. So we've got a carbon accreditations for our services from an airport infrastructure point of view. So for example, all our vehicles are electric. We have electric passenger vehicles that take passengers and crew to and from our terminal, electric tugs, electric GPUs. So we don't have diesel GPUs anymore. We retired those. And those vehicles that have to be diesel, like the lorries, for example, the trucks that tow our fuel, we use something called HVO, which is like a synthetic diesel biofuel. So from an airport perspective, we've got a very high airport accreditation. So when we look at our kind of overall sort of sustainability angle, we're trying to look after ourselves. And on the passenger side, it's really quite interesting. So we see this mix between your corporate that has perhaps more of an agenda to address from a sustainability point, especially if they're a publicly listed or a trading company and they have an aeroplane as a business tool, they're more likely to be interested in the sustainable aircraft fuel. Problem we have in Europe is supply. We don't have a lot of it. So, and when we have it, it gets sold quite quickly to the corporates. The charter side of the business is difficult because obviously charter is all about revenues and margin. And when you've got a higher fuel percentage or a higher fuel cost, they're mostly unlikely to take it. So for us as an airport, we're really trying to drive the agenda. We're considering potentially going to a SAF-only fuel by 2030, having SAF only on site, maybe. A big, really big gig in the UK is trying to push this. And we already have a high blend. We have 38% on average blend SAF versus JA1. So we have a really, really high blend on site. So we're really trying to encourage our operators to think about SAF. But the industry, I think, depending on which operator group, is quite far behind the curve on it. In terms of our airport, it's all about the customer. It's all about the customer service. It's all about the customer's delivery. You know, we very much major so heavily on that because ultimately we see a lot of it, and a lot of it is that's directed at our crews. So the crew is important feedback because 9 times out of 10, we'll deal with the crews more than we'll actually do with our passengers.
Sure.
And in a way, we treat the crews as almost of our customer.
That's okay. Huge.
Yeah. And especially in this US market, it's all about the feedback. You know, we've won a lot of awards, you know, outside of being best FBO outside of the Americas. And a lot of that is about how we treat our, how we treat the customers. You know, what is the service experience? You know, what are we trying to ensure that they get the best sort of service, quick turnarounds? I mean, we've listened to our crews over the years. For example, one of the things, the feedback that we had was that crew wanted a gym. So we've got a crew gym on site that allows crews, especially if they're on a bit of downtime, got a couple of, you know, a couple of hours between sectors, or even if they're staying over, they come and use our gym on site. So really trying to look at that kind of experience, but it, not just the passenger customer, but the whole gambit. And then from the, you know, from the brokerage side as well, we work across all of the areas of the industry. So having been in aircraft management, I understand the pressures and issues around operators have of handling aeroplanes. I understand your side, because obviously you've got a customer that's coming to you, especially on first time basis, and there's a lot of trust in that relationship to ensure that there's the due diligence is done on the aeroplane, you know, that they're getting a very, you know, a very good pedigree aircraft. It's really, really important that throughout that process, the touch points, you know, are really carefully managed to ensure that there's trust. I think from a new customer point of view, new owner, a key relationship, especially in Europe, is with a management company. Finding the right management company and the right fit is really, really important, because ultimately that management company will navigate the regulatory environment. And the regulatory environment in Europe is very, very different from the regulatory environment in the States. Your Part 91, for example, in the US is quite a flexible arrangement, probably the right way, whereas in Europe it's a lot structured. So our equivalent in Europe is something called Part NCC. And ultimately, they're looking for somebody to be responsible for the airplane. Wow. I would never advise an owner to put them down as responsible. Make your operator responsible, because ultimately, then they're responsible for crew duty, responsible for maintenance, responsible for flight planning, overflight, and especially if you're a new user, it's a complex environment, you know. And there are a number of professionals out there in the market that can help you or help them navigate this world. At the end of the day, what they want to do is enjoy their asset. Okay, they want to enjoy their asset. They want to get from A to B and maybe C, you know, really smoothly and efficiently. And the way to navigate that is with a good operator. Yeah. That would be my top tip. And that comes from somebody who worked for an operator, because it just demystifies everything. Yes, there's a cost to it, but if you get the right deal, you know, it will reap the benefits and you can learn from that experience. Now, in the future, you may become an operator yourself, because some people in certain models do like a Part 91 equivalent. Sure. But that takes time and experience, and with the right team around them, you can do it. First time buyer, especially if they're looking for charter and like 135 operations is important. Somebody who can, you know, provide them good charter revenue. But I would always question charter guarantees. That's quite an interesting model. Absolutely. Yeah, an interesting one. Interesting one. You have to navigate them with a little bit of caution. Absolutely. But my top tip is a really, really solid operator, and that's probably the best way to start.
Sorry for the interruption. I just had the opportunity to speak with Jason Zilberbram over at VREF, and they are launching their brand new VREF 3.0. VREF is the trusted resource that many lenders will use to provide evaluation on an aircraft. With 3.0, they're introducing a more mobile-friendly interface. You're going to be able to connect with brokers and owners. You're going to be able to get instant valuations. You're going to be able to find out information about aircraft that are currently for sale and historical data as well. Whether you're a broker or a buyer, having access to reliable information when it comes to market trends and it comes to aircraft valuations is extremely important. So if you want to check it out and even get 10% off, you can go to go.theultimatejetguide.com/VREF for more information. Thank you so much, VREF, for sponsoring this video.
So how does an airport view owners, crew? I think you spoke to it a little bit. You know, you talked about we see the crews as owners. Yeah. How do you balance, or I guess, can you pull back the curtain a little bit from a airport's perspective of what are you trying to do? What's the product you're trying to deliver so that an owner can kind of see that and be like, oh, that's why they did this, or that's why they're trying to do that.
So Pharma's quite unique in the sense that we own and operate everything you see. So we're quite different in the market compared to others. You know, we're not like an airport that has a number of FBOs on site. Mm. So therefore that end-to-end service, you know, pretty much from when the customer or the passenger enters the gate of the airport, it's all us.
Yeah, you control the experience.
Yeah, we control the experience completely. You know, from where the customer parks their car, where their driver parks their car, you know, the services to the driver, the services to the housekeeper, whatever, and what we try and do is when we talk to them, we understand what their priorities are. Mm. You know, is it that it's the speed and efficiency? You know, is it that they have a pet and they want to make sure that pet is looked after? We have a pet service on site. So we want to try and get into the under the skin and what is really, really important. Now, but at the same time, we don't want to make it particularly complex and layers. We don't want to create too much work. So that may be that we're a liaise with the management company because the management company always working on behalf of the principal directly. Yeah.
Well, I like that because you explain this idea of, and we talk about this, we're, you know, jet life. We talk about jet life to the fullest. Sure, yeah. It's not just the jet. It's not just in the jet. It's that whole experience. Like you said, dropping off your luggage at the aircraft or getting picked up.
And there's a life cycle element as well, you know, because we understand, especially first-time buyers, we hope they have a good experience. We hope that, you know, their business goes successfully and they open up different opportunities. And what we kind of want is the long-term customer. We're not here for the, you know, we appreciate the certain transient and the US corporate, they come and go because they're not based here. But from a long-term perspective, it's good for us to forge relationships early on, have that as much contact as our client wants. So the unique thing about this market is everybody's different. Some people want to have that unique relationship. I met a guy last year, a Silicon Valley guy, IPO, made $1 billion, bought a G650. He said, I want to come and see your hangar, personally to me. So that's one end of the scale. And the other end of the scale is we've got people who don't want to have that delivered, just want to get on and go. So we have to measure our approach appropriately to what our customers
want. As a buyer, they should take that into account. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of times I'll even find guys that want to buy a plane. I'm like, okay, where are we basing it? Like, there's no hangar space where you want to base it, my friend. Like, what are we going to do here? So what I love about this conversation, it opens up this idea for the buyers. Start thinking about your jet life as a whole, not just this is the jet that can fit as many people, take me where I need to go, and off I go. There's a why. You're going into a whole new lifestyle. And I appreciate that for your perspective as an airport, you understand that and you can experience that throughout the entire time, as some people won't have that. You know, they have to go with the FBO or the management company or the rental company and kind of have to piece it together. But that's huge. I appreciate that insight.
You know, and it's all about the team as well. It's all about understanding who's working for the customer. I completely understand that the customer may only want to deal with one focal point. So in that regard, I would deal directly with the management company or directly with yourselves, because ultimately, you know, the customer wants concise data, you know, they may not have time to read a, you know, 65 page document. So we try to, you know, make things as simple and streamlined as possible. But it's a complex business.
The customer take the lead.
Yeah, sure.
And sometimes they don't know what they don't know. Mm-hmm. Hopefully after this video, they'll start thinking about more from the airport experience and not just the jet itself.
Yeah, exactly. And the regulatory environment in Europe is slightly different in the sense that there's probably more reliance on management companies because they have the expertise than perhaps you might do in the US.
Sure.
So there are lots of different ways of doing it. I would recommend, obviously, that they have a team around them that they trust.
Yes.
And that's really, really important that they feel that they're getting good value for the information. I mean, from my side, my title's business development. I don't really like that title. It's more about consultancy. So people say, I've got this problem. Sure. How do you solve it? Well, these are selection solutions that I provide. There are others out there that might do it slightly differently. There are others out there that might do it slightly cheaply, but maybe a different price point. We are what we do because we're the best in the business, certainly in the London market. We hope that those solutions fit with the customer, but ultimately we understand that there's a choice. People have got a choice. Yeah. So, you know, it may not work with their local residents or it may be that they come to us because we've got a hangar and nowhere else has got a hangar, but they live somewhere else. So it's all about understanding that kind of priority for them. And then, as you say, it's the picture, the overall jet life. And if we can help with that, then happy days.
That's great. We don't have to keep this in, but I'm just kind of curious, what is it like over in Europe when it comes to private aviation? I just kind of see, I get pictures of like protesters standing on there and like chaining up jets.
I'm going to piggyback off that too.
Yeah.
I was going to ask, so I'm not very familiar with the regulation, but you can educate me. But I saw, for example, I know this isn't France, but in France and in Spain, I saw they're banning like short haul flights or something, less than like 2.5 hour train ride. How does that, I don't know if it affects you at all, but does that affect your business in any way for the future? Because I'm not sure if they're pushing for that regulation as well.
I guess from the perspective of if you're an American looking to buy a jet and traveling in Europe, what's the environment like over there?
Yeah, so it's challenging, I think. I mean, we're certainly going through a period of, you know, change and protest. I think that's for sure. It's something people should be aware of. Ultimately, it means you should have a good insurance product, quite frankly, because there are, you know, let's be realistic, there are people out there that kind of, you know, I mean, touch wood, in the UK we've had no issues. I mean, we've had protesters at Farnborough, but people understand as soon as they cut the fence and get in, they can be prosecuted. So, you know, ultimately it's private property. I think that it's something that we have to live with as an industry. Having said that, general aviation, business aviation in the UK isn't going away. We see the market growing. Our OEMs are sold out. You know, you can't get your hands on an airplane. It's just like the same issue you have in the US. Sold out until 2025 for a lot of product. The used market is buoyant. You know, business aviation has gone for a boom post-COVID because people understand the benefits of business aviation now. There's, you know, and our commercial airports are in absolute turmoil.
I was wondering, like, in the US, obviously, I believe most of it are controlled by FAA and, like, municipalities and stuff. Yep. In Europe, is it controlled by... You
know, so, So in Europe, so you know, if you appreciate some of the politics, we're kind of out... The UK is outside of Europe now. So the authority in Europe is EASA. The authority in the UK is the CAA, Civil Aviation Authority, so they would be the one that looks at the regulatory point of view from aircraft operations and aircraft registry.
Although registrations can go in certain airspaces.
That's true, yeah. Although you pretty much you can on the charter side, yeah, there's some different things in terms of permit side, but your Part 91 equivalent is that's free open skies, no issue. In terms of the short haul ban, we're unsure of whether that means that certainly on commercial aviation, that's it. We're not sure necessarily that it has rung true for business jet flights and in Paris. Or if you go in Paris to the south of France, I'm not sure how that impacts internally. Our largest market is Paris and Nice. We do an awful lot of flying there from the UK. Our current government is pro-business aviation, future government, who knows. There is a tax already, APD, Advanced Passenger Duty, on flying in Europe, flying in the UK, but it's a very small number, really, in comparison to, and I think that's a charter cost rather than a Part 91 price. Again, a management provider would be able to advise what those costs look like. But never say never, you know, I mean, this is the way things are going. However, we recognise Farnborough was designated a business aviation airport because of the amount of traffic that we've received that couldn't be serviced in other airports. So Heathrow, for example, has maybe 20 flights a month, whereas we're operating, maybe 3,000 a month flying out of Farnborough. So, you know, we dedicate to that area of the market because there's nowhere else in London that can pick up as much. You know, we've got other competing airports.
Yeah.
So it's one of those things. I mean, the protest side of things is one of those things we live with and we adapt as an industry. It's not going away, so we have to live with it.
I think right, but at the same time, you see the business aviation is here to stay. I appreciate what you said there because I think it's reality, and we're all growing together. Like you said, sustainability is a big thing. You know, unmanned aircraft, the drone stuff. I mean, it's all like the future's in the skies. We're here. What's the buzz line for this conference? It's like writing the future in the skies, something like that.
I mean,
the future takes flight.
Yeah, I mean, you know, as a business, we're aware, obviously, of these protesters. We have business continuity planning, BCP planning around what happens if, dare I say it. We have fantastic relations with the local police force, you know, so we understand that it's a reality of our, of the times we live in, quite frankly, and we're not getting away from it, you know, fortunately, unfortunately. We don't see that as it's putting off individual buyers or charter customers. In fact, the charter market's going for a huge boom because of the fact that people can't get to where they want to go to on scheduled commercial airline. So, you know, from a flexibility point of view, we still are the go-to place for a lot of individuals. You know, as a stat, we fly to 800 destinations annually at Farnborough. Heathrow flies to 200. So, you know, if you want to get somewhere in Europe and the wider Africa and, for, you know, as where else, and you can't get to it commercially, you got to come to us.
Got any football teams hanging out of Farnborough?
Yeah, we have Chelsea. Chelsea football team that's owned by, it's American-owned, I believe, now.
That's right.
Yeah. So we have a little bit of those guys. Those guys have got a training camp not so far away, so they fly out of there. We've got a lounge on the top floor that holds around 50 or 60 people, so we put them through there as well. McLaren Formula One around the corner as well, so we have those guys through. A few of the rugby teams. And we were very honoured to have our King flow out of our Farmer recently as well. So, yeah, we've got... he either rolls around in a 900 LX or he has a 321 long range VIP. So, maybe not Air Force One, but it's GB Force One. But they call it ministerial flight, so they use it for the Prime Minister as well. So it's not just a royal aeroplane. It's kind of used for all suits the same. Yeah, so much to the. It's funny because the rest of Europe has these things. The Germans have loads of stuff, but. It seems to be a bit of a point of contention, and people put it in the news when he sees him flying. Our Prime Minister does a lot of flying. How do you get to spaces really quickly, you know, really efficiently? Take a business airplane.